Well, whether it's British or American forces in Iraq or, as we've also heard, perhaps in Afghanistan, a question remains on many minds today. How could this have happened in the first place? How could prison guards have conducted these kinds of terrible things? A landmark sarcology study in 1971 may offer some explanations. That experiment sought to understand the psychology of prison life and what happens to the behavior of both prisoners and guards. If this is something you've had experience with, give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And by the way, we've been having terrible problems with some cell phone calls. If you're calling the Talk of the Nation on your cell phone, if you're in a car, please pull over first. It's obviously safer for you and other drivers, and we'll be able to hear your comments more clearly. The number again, 800-989-8255. Philip Zimbardo conducted the Stanford Prison Experiment back in 1971. He's a psychology professor at Stanford University, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
What were you trying to learn?
Very simply, what happens when you put good people in an evil place? Does the goodness of the people overwhelm the evil, or does the system corrupt good people? And the answer we found was very simple. And the answer we found in that study has been replicated a number of times in other research I've done and research social psychologists have done, that when you have a system of evil, and I can describe that very briefly, that the majority of good people succumb, give in, comply, conform, are blindly obedient to authority. Good boys in our study became sadistic guards. That it's not everyone, but the problem is the majority of people give in to these situational forces. And those situational forces in our study, and mm-hmm. there's an exact parallel to what happened in Baghdad, is where you have secrecy, and secrecy is the modus operandi in virtually all prisons, so nobody knows really what's happening there, where you don't have accountability from top down, where you have a strong supervisor setting the limits of what is acceptable, what is unacceptable, where you have sanctions for unacceptable behavior, and in fact you begin to reward some kinds of behavior, where you allow the guards to dehumanize the prisoners, to begin to think of them as less than human. In this case, there's some of the guards in the Baghdad prison call them animals. Where the people running the guards, where they have a sense of they're not accountable to anyone, that they are essentially in this secret environment where there's no supervision, and the rules are vague and changing. And then you have social modeling. That is, all you need is one or two people to start doing this aberrant behavior. And they not only model it in order not to feel guilty, they induce the others around to join in.
Now, you took, what, about 70 students, as I recall, and half were, some were, randomly selected to be guards. Some were, others were selectively, were picked to be inmates. And you threw them together. But did you give the guards any training? And presumably prison guards, even MPs in Baghdad, get training to be guards and restraint from these kind of things.
No. Well, in fact, the interesting thing is, in most prisons, there's really very limited training. You would be surprised, in even maximum security prisons, it's less than 1 week's training in how to actually deal with inmates. Mm-hmm. We didn't give them a training. We just said, whatever you know about being a guard, that's what you do. Maintain law and order. You cannot be physically abusive of the prisoners. But what happened very quickly is the guards have unlimited power. So that's the issue. Prisons are places of power and powerlessness. The power of the guards always have to be on guard against the sadistic impulse, which comes with having the total power of somebody else. And so what happened in our situation, now, we, as you said, we randomly assigned, we flipped a coin, you be guard, you be a prisoner. But before we did that, we gave personality tests to all of the kids who had applied. And mm-hmm. these are students from all over America. These are not kids who were from Stanford University. And we picked the ones who are most normal and most healthy. No history of crime, drug abuse, and so, because we wanted to start off with really good people in this place. And what we observed is really like reality TV. Each day, the transformation. Initially, we're interested in the prisoners, how they would adapt. But we realized the even more interesting thing is how good people become perpetrators of evil, and it's a gradual seduction into this phase, so that each day guards would begin to be bored. And they would use the prisoners as their playthings. And each thing you did, then you built on. You were more creative. Mm-hmm. The next day you did something.
And the worst abuses, you wrote, happened at night.
See, the worst abuses happened in the middle of the night when in fact, I was the superintendent of prison sleeping. because they didn't realize everything was being
videotaped.
And it wasn't until the next day we observed. So we have an exact parallel. The guards line up the prisoners and say, okay, you're female camels, bend over. And the prisoners were in smocks with no underpants. And when they bent over, their butts were showing. And they say, oh, you guys are male camels, hump them. And they begin to simulate sodomy. These are college students, knowing they're in an experiment, making other college students do this. And then similar kinds of things. And once I realized that, we said we have to end the study. It's really out of control. Mm. But in fact, in 4 days, four prisoners had emotional breakdowns. A fifth one had a full butt psychosomatic rash. And these are kids we picked because they were totally normal and healthy. Their sense of hopelessness, powerless, you know, had gotten to them in this really powerful way. And the same thing with the guards. Now, not everyone did it. It's just that the majority give in to the power of the situation. So you know, when you're saying who's responsible, we're blaming those six soldiers. Essentially, it's the system. It's not a few bad apples in a good barrel. It's a bad barrel. And the barrel is war. It's the vinegar barrel of war that corrupts the best of Americans, whether it's in My Lai or whether it's in Baghdad.
We're speaking with Philip Zimbardo, a psychology professor at Stanford University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a listener involved in the conversation. Leslie joins us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the experiences that I had, I work in a maximum security male facility of over 800 male inmates. And, you know, maybe I'm fortunate to be working in Wisconsin where I received 6 weeks of pre-service academy and then went into the institution where we received more training.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to say that the majority of correctional officers are doing their job under very stressful situation, long term. And we aren't like police officers who go and arrest a bad guy, then let him go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the long term stressful experience for us. And you know, I've been 6 years in the same institution, and I definitely have developed relationships. I mean, I wouldn't say relationships, but men come to me when their families, things are happening to them on the outside that they can't control. I mean, there is an intense feeling of powerlessness at being institutionalized, especially in a situation where, you know, our guys are institutionalized for forever. You
right.
know, there's quite a few lifers.
Very long sentences. So the power relationships are definitely there, but would you describe it as evil?
No, not in any way. We are very much accountable for our behavior. And like I said, I mean, I realize Wisconsin is sort of a model, I believe.
Would you agree with that, Professor Zimbardo?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you would train, and I would bet that that's relatively rare in state prisons. But also, you would train, you said the key word, you're accountable, there were rules to follow. Just think of this Iraqi prison where there was minimal training. The superintendent had no... Brigadier General Karpinski had no experience running a prison ever, and she's put in charge of three prisons. Most of the military police had no training in corrections, but they're put in this place where there's also no clear rules. It's clearly that this unit was the torture interrogation section. So now you have military police taking orders from civilians, mm-hmm. which never happens. Karpinski said she was told never to go to that section. In fact, she never did. So there's no presence of authority, and that the authority is mixed. You have civilian contractors, you have the CIA.
Right.
Let me ask Leslie what you thought when you saw this these reports coming out of Baghdad.
Well, I'm shocked and horrified. And, of course, a lot of correctional officers are ex-military.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, quite a few of my coworkers have military time, served in Desert Storm, overseas, you know, and so on. And they're quite shocked, too. I mean, I guess the point that I especially want to enforce is, you know, we hear about the most egregious cases. There was a case in Florida where mm-hmm. some men, allegedly stomped to death an inmate. And I'm not saying that, I'm not at all justifying their actions, and I'm horrified by what I'm seeing overseas. And again, I think it has, you know, speaks to the lack of professionalism, lack of training mm-hmm. that they had. But the majority of us are you know, doing an honorable job.
Right.
And I feel like we really don't get a break by the media. Because, you know,
and I'm gonna reinforce your impression because I'm gonna have to cut you off because we're running out of time, Leslie.
Yes, well, thanks so
thank
much,
you.
Neil.
Well, thank you for your comments, Leslie.
Thank you for the call. Just very briefly, Professor, as a result of your study, did any training of prison guards change?
Not that we know of. The only result of our study was Senator Birch Bayh, who I gave a testimony for a congressional subcommittee. Developed a federal law so that juveniles in pre-trial detention, which what our study was about, in which the Iraqi prisoners are, can no longer be housed with adults in mm-hmm. federal prisons because they were getting gang raped, because the system allows that abuse.
So long ago, that was, of course, the father of the current senator from Indiana,
right.
Evan Bayh.
Right.
Philip Zimbardo, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil. I really enjoyed being here.
Philip Zimbardo is a psychology professor at Stanford University, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.